And may it please the court, Daniel Scott Harawa, on behalf of the appellant Arthur Lee Sanford, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your honors, the state concedes that it violated habeas rule 5 in two distinct ways. First, the state concedes that it violated habeas rule 5C when it did not attach transcripts to its answer, despite citing transcripts throughout its answer. And then the state concedes that it violated habeas rule 5D when it did not include all of Mrs. Sanford's briefs and motions that he filed in state court contesting his conviction, including his full petition to appeal that was filed in the Virginia Supreme Court, along with the attached exhibits. Under this court's reasoning in Thompson v. Green, this court must reverse. Now, the state nevertheless argues that the district court did not abuse its discretion in relieving it from complying with Rule 5. But that argument must fail for at least two reasons. First, the district court never acknowledged the state's failure to comply with habeas Rule 5, and therefore there's no discretionary ruling at play. But second, the language of habeas Rule 5 is mandatory. Thompson v. Green makes clear that compliance with habeas Rule 5 is mandatory, and the state does not cite a single case in which a court held that a respondent did not have to comply with the mandatory rule. So therefore, it would have been an abuse of discretion if the district court had excused the state from complying with the rule. And ultimately, Your Honors, and with respect to my friend on the other side, the state's litigation choices in this case created somewhat of a mess. Because the state did not attach the necessary documents to its answer, it's not clear that the district court had those documents before it when issuing its ruling. This court doesn't have the documents now for it to review the district court's ruling. And Mr. Sanford never—
We don't. I mean, the circuit court habeas, we don't have, do we?
You don't have any of the state habeas records, Your Honor.
It's surprising to me. I tried to figure this out. The district court clerk said they sent us everything they have. And our clerk says and asked several times for the circuit court, and we don't have it. So the long and short, it looks like the district court didn't have it. Now, the question is, when the district court said it was referring to the circuit court record, it only cited the state's response. Every citation is the state's response. It was not to the record itself. And there is a somewhat of a mystery here. My guess is the record's still sitting down there in the circuit court somewhere, but you haven't solved that problem yet?
Your Honor, it's very much a whodunit, or a case of the missing records. I believe, and the state can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the state said that the circuit court records are in Newport News.
They were supposed to be transmitted to the federal court.
Yes, right? And Your Honor, yes, the district court needed those records to issue its ruling, and this court certainly needs those records to review the ruling. The state hasn't made, as far as I'm aware, any—
Can I ask you about that, sir, about how this process should work? So the district court, in this case, did make a request that as part of the order, that the records of the state proceedings, if pertinent and available, be forwarded to the clerk's office, and it's not clear whether or not that actually happened. But is that typically the practice? I mean, in the Thompson case, I think the way the district court, I don't know if the district court specifically requested records, it may simply have relied on the response filed by the state and whatever records the state would attach to its answer. So if what had happened in this case, if the court simply had relied on the state attorney general to submit whatever relevant records it deemed necessary to dispose of the case and attach them to the answer, would that have sufficed?
I think that would, if I understand your question, Your Honor, and I want to clarify what happened in Thompson and explain why it's similar to what happened here. So in Thompson, the district court did issue a similar order asking the Attorney General of Maryland to forward any pertinent state court records along with its answer. And there, the Attorney General of Maryland just didn't send the entire case record to the court. It created a set of exhibits and filed them separately from its answer. And so, this court—
In addition to the entire record, is that what you're saying? Or just that was the record?
That was those were the pertinent records that the Attorney General identified in response to the court's order for records.
But apparently what happened here, at least what's represented here, is that the entire record was delivered to the district court. Apparently not, but that was what the court anticipated would happen. And then the state, in its answer, attached exhibits, didn't attach the transcripts that it relied on, and the exhibits themselves were incomplete. Is that right?
And yes, Your Honor, and if I can just say, maybe the state is in the practice of having the entire state court record forwarded to the district court. But I think the point we're trying to make here is that doesn't excuse the state from complying with Habeas Rule 5 and its dictates. And that is really for the district court's benefit. We don't want district courts to have to sift through boxes of records. I don't know if this court has seen the box of records that the district court filed that has never been docketed anywhere. The whole point of Habeas Rule 5 is that it's a funneling system where the district court is pointed to the most pertinent documents. And so I don't think the state can say, well, we had the entire record forwarded, even though the state said, or the district court said, only send us the pertinent records. And then the state said—
The district court didn't say that here. The district court sent us the pertinent record on the trial, but it also asked for the habeas files,
yes,
both in the state and the upper court. Now, there is a certificate of a transmission from the Supreme Court, a few documents there. I don't quite know if that's in the file. Anyway, what I do know is we don't have the habeas records, and it looks like the district court didn't have it.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that is the only— the state tries to transform the district court's single sentence that I've reviewed all of the records. But I don't think given—
Yeah, but every citation the court gave was to the court, the government's response. They did not, the court did not cite to any record.
Yes.
To indicate that to me, my guess was just a statement that it assumed it.
So, Kelsey, I'm trying to, I may be jumping ahead a little bit or not, but is it your position that if the state had complied with subsection C and D, the issues about, would you have the information that you need? Would that be satisfactory? Because we have these issues about private docket entries and, the whole transcripts from all the proceedings. I'm trying to figure out if that effectively is satisfied by your view of what's required under 5C and D.
I think it is, Your Honor, usually. The one caveat I think would be to the extent the court starts relying on other information outside of what would be attached in exhibits, then I do think a petitioner would still be hamstrung in their ability to respond to claims or to respond to the district court's ruling. But I think in most cases, the state complying with the rules would alleviate any concerns of the type that are present here, given the state of the records facing this court now. And Judge Niemeyer, I think your point is exactly right. And that's why I think the state's argument that the one sentence in the district court's order saying I've received all the records doesn't hold water, or this can't be sure that that's true, given that this court doesn't have the records.
Well, my take on it, based on what we have, is that the court assumed it had the full records because relied on what the state filed in its response. But it relied only on the response, nothing what was in the habeas files. And so the response is the issue under Rule 5. The record is at issue under the court's order that directed the state to direct it all. To me, it looks like this case is unintentionally messy because of the question of whether the district court had all the records and whether the petitioner had the records necessary to respond. It may not make a difference, but this is a pretty serious case, as I recall, the underlying case. And I'm interested in hearing what the state has to say about the record issue. Whether it's harmful or not is another question. I, in the back of my mind, it looked like at least some of the transcripts your client had, but he doesn't know what was being relied on by the state and what was being advanced and what transcripts in particular. But
Your Honor, I just quickly like to make two points. I mean, we do know that Mr. Sanford didn't have all of the records because he moved this court after the state filed its response. He moved the district court for a copy of the state court records explaining that he didn't have those records. I mean, that's at JA 224. And so we know he may have had some of them. There's no finding on what records he had versus he didn't have. But I think on this record, the fact that he asked the court for records and the court denied it, we know he didn't have at least some of them.
And so, Mr. Arwala, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but so to follow up on that, and you raised the point earlier about this being Rule 5 being a funnel approach. And then you, in response to Judge Quattlebaum's question, you indicated that you had a caveat to that, and that being that if the district court relied on something outside of the state's answer, that that would be problematic. And I guess that's the concern. That would be the concern in every case, right? Because if the state records are submitted in full to the district court, but the state relies on a portion of the record in its answer, and then the district court goes beyond that response and looks at the entire record to dispose of the case, the petitioner is in a bind because he doesn't have the entire record. It's not like a direct appeal where you have a JA, which is sort of a funnel in a direct appeal, but both parties have access to the entire record. That's not the case typically in this scenario, right?
Your Honor, that's right. And I think the practice of just sending the entire records is problematic as a general principle, because as we see here, documents may go missing. We don't know what the district court relies on. We know the petitioner doesn't have them. All I was trying to suggest to Judge Quattlebaum is that I think in most cases, it probably is the case that if the respondent is focusing on certain documents and the petitioner has them, the petitioner can respond. But I do think, and it's a question this court need not reach now, but I do think in the event that the district court starts relying on things that the petitioner doesn't have, that creates a separate issue that this court would have to address. Because
I'm not sure in this case we can determine what the court relied on. It looks to me like the court relied on only what the state included in its response, even though that response didn't include everything.
Yes.
Although that's not totally clear, because I think, I don't know. But the problem with the record, there's no requirement that your client be given the record. But in this case, the court ordered the whole record and purportedly relied on it. And then your client didn't know that the record was up here because it was done with a out of court docket entry. I'm interested in hearing from the government on this.
I hear your urging, Your Honor. So if I may reserve the rest of my time and I can turn it over to my friend and address remaining questions on rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Minix? You've heard most of my questions.
Yes, Your Honor. Let me. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Leanna Minix, and I represent the director of the Virginia Department of Corrections in this habeas corpus appeal. I have heard the court's concerns, and before I begin, I would like to just note that I realize this case is unusual in some ways, and I understand the court has questions about the treatment of Rule 5 in this case and more broadly.
Actually, I'm concerned not only about Rule 5, but I'm concerned a little bit about beyond that, because the court reviewed the petition, and it's not required to have the records, but it issued a show cause order, and in connection with that, directed that the state provide all the records, including the circuit court habeas file. Apparently, a lot was shipped up to the court, but no one knows where the circuit court habeas file is. Now, the question is, that would be pretty important for a federal court to be reviewing, applying the 2254 standards of what was decided, what wasn't decided, what was the ruling, and what was before the court, and this type of thing. And the court said it had the records. I think it said it, but it looked like just a generalized statement, because every statement it made in its opinion refers to your response. That's one issue that bothers me. And the other issue is the response did not have all the records attached that Rule 5 requires. And none of this is a terribly serious thing, but it is a procedural mess up. It seems to me we ought to fix, shouldn't we?
Yes, Your Honor. I and I'm happy to address the court's concerns about the records that are now absent in this case.
No, we don't have the our clerk has searched and checked with the clerk of the district court. And so I don't know, has anybody checked with the Norfolk Circuit Court?
Yes, Your Honor, I did. I personally investigated the record in this case, and I went to Norfolk Circuit Court. I reviewed the record there. I had a hunch that it had been inadvertently returned. And I'm happy to, I would point out that this case, after the district court entered its original memorandum opinion granting the respondent's motion to dismiss, this case came up for review on direct appeal before this court. It was affirmed on direct appeal by this court, and this court entered an order, and this is at JA 273, saying that it had independently reviewed the record. And so I would submit that on direct appeal, there's a presumption of regularity that attached to the district court's findings that it had reviewed the record, and to this court's finding that it had independently reviewed the record. As to the communications between the clerk's offices, I would submit that those communications came after the petitioner had filed his Rule 60B motion. And I'm not exactly sure where the records were.
What's the story about the failure to include the materials required by Rule 5? There seemed to be quite a bit omitted.
Your Honor, as we admitted on brief, we did not include the transcripts under Rule 5C.
And it didn't include his whole petition. As a matter of fact, his petition was quite lengthy and had exhibits, and that wasn't included.
I agree, Your Honor. We also did not include a complete copy of his petition for appeal. But in looking at the petitioner's complaints below, and I would point to his Doc 12, which is in the joint appendix, his response to our motion to dismiss, as well as his Doc 16, which was his motion for additional records, the petitioner never complained that he did not have access to those documents. And I would submit that in considering...
Well, that's not totally clear. He cited several things that looked showing that he had some materials, but he also complained that he wasn't getting records and he had moved, and continually complained to the courts that he didn't have records. And we look very hard, but it'd be nice to handle this on a harmless error type of situation, because it's what's the problem with just letting the district court collect all the matters and see whether it has any different view based on the presence of all the records?
Well,
district
Your Honor,
court tells us they didn't have the record.
I would disagree, because I do think that the district court found it had the record.
It made the one statement, and
that was an order.
One statement was sort of backed up in the very next sentence. All of them were based on what you said in the response, or not you, but the filed.
Well, Your Honor, I would point to Doc 33, which is the court's order.
I know it's in the order. I know it's in the order, but my guess in reading and putting it all together, the clerks are pretty careful on these things, and there's no transmission back to the state. They would have a clearer transmission order than boxing it. They did not have an itemization. They had two entries of the records, which did not itemize them. They talked about the number of folders, what they received. And I don't know if the state habeas is defined by those folders. Have you compared the number of folders in the state habeas with the docket entry? The clerk has made actual counted the manila,
yes,
folders and counted this.
I examined the record that was here in this court.
The docket entry in the district court itemizes just by folder what it received.
I believe
my question is, does that itemization match the nature of the record in the circuit court for Norfolk?
Based on my review of the circuit court record in Norfolk, there was one habeas corpus file. And then there is, you know, Your Honor, I would actually have to review my notes before I make that representation. But I did look at the entirety of the file in Newport News. I certainly
ask you this. Would you object to having this case go back to Judge Brinkema and say, get all the records before you and look at the arguments in view of those records? And I think at the least, she should allow you to file an amended response so that the petitioner can have all the materials on which you're relying in order to prepare his arguments.
I would urge this court to affirm on the merits. If the court were to decide that it was appropriate to remand this case, I do think that is the appropriate scope of the remand if the court reached that conclusion. But I do think there is more than enough evidence before this court to affirm on the merits.
There's evidence to affirm on the merits, but the petitioner would say we didn't have all the evidence.
Well, and
it's his position.
But I disagree with his position. And I'm happy to point out that I think that looking closely at his objections below, the petitioner was complaining that he kept saying that the court did not have a complete factual record before it. And that was the petitioner's way of, even in his first federal filing, before anybody had filed anything in response, of complaining that he had not received a state evidentiary hearing. He wanted the opportunity to present additional evidence. And so he urged the court to grant his federal habeas petition on the ground that it had an incomplete record before it. He wanted a federal hearing. He used that language in his federal habeas corpus petition, and he echoes that language in his Doc 12 and Doc 16. The petitioner was concerned about the court having the complete record before it, but he never complained that he did not have access to these records. And so while, again, we have admitted that we did not comply with these requirements in Rule 5, this case is not like Thompson, where the court held that Rule 5 provided for no discretion at all.
If it's not complied with, it was a mandatory violation.
No discretion as to the respondent's practice of not providing petitioners with copies of parts of their actual pleading. The failure of the Maryland Attorney General's office to serve its exhibits on a petitioner.
I understand that. That's a little slightly different. But here, the petitioner was served, but he was served with only a part of what the state was required to provide. The Rule 5 requires a list of things to be attached to a response, mandatorily. They were not attached. What was attached was deficient, as you've acknowledged, and that was served on him. So he has that. But he says the state relied on materials that it didn't attach, including the transcripts.
Well, Your Honor, I think looking at the rule, looking at the language in Rule 5C, shows particularly why this issue is subject to an abuse of discretion standard, on top of the fact the petitioner did not raise in looking at his
in that statement. What's the argument?
Well, looking at Rule 5C, the rule first says that the respondent must attach parts of the transcript that the respondent considers relevant. So that is an exercise of discretion on the respondent's counsel's part. And I agree that
Relied on portions of the transcript and didn't attach it.
Yes, Your Honor, and I acknowledge that. Yeah. But the second part of the rule allows for the district court to also exercise its discretion in ordering us to provide additional transcripts. And so while the ruling
that's additional transcript, but how about the initial transcript that was omitted and not provided to the petitioner?
Yes, Your Honor, looking at the text of the rule, I think the text of the rule is at issue here. And so while the court said in Thompson it was reversible error there, here this rule provides for the exercise of discretion by the district court. And the district court could look at the petitioner's first filing as well as his state court filings.
The district court did not even acknowledge that the transcripts were not provided in the response. And he complained. He complained. He says, I didn't get any transcripts, and the copy of my petition was omitted from the district court. The 24 pages were provided, but the remainder was not provided, and the exhibits were not provided. And so the court didn't acknowledge that. Now, the question is, if the petitioner's entitled to that before he makes his defense, and you don't comply, it's not a question of discretion. He didn't ask for additional transcripts. He only asked for what was included in the response.
Your Honor,
the response doesn't require the whole transcript. It just requires the transcripts you relied on.
Yes, Your Honor. And in looking at the citations that the petitioner cited in his Doc 1, his first filing, and the citations that we cited, there is significant overlap. And so
I noticed that, and that's very troubling. I don't know what he had. He had some transcript of some kind. And the question is, do we conclude that he had all the transcripts? Do we conclude he had the transcripts that you were referring to? There is some cross-reference there.
Yes, Your Honor. And
why do we sort that out on appeal?
Well, again, I would submit that the presumption of regularity has attached.
There's no presumption. We know it's irregular. We already know it's irregular.
Your Honor, there is enough evidence before this court to know that the district court did receive and review those records, in addition to the district court's finding and this court's order on direct appeal. There are several documents included in the supplemental joint appendix.
Counsel, why isn't I'm going to move a little bit beyond Rule 5. I mean, why is the a petitioner not entitled to know what the district court receives in response to a request for documents?
Are you referring to the transfer of the whole state record, Your Honor?
Yes.
I heard the court's concerns about that as well. The transfer of the record, let me just back up a little bit. This is a ministerial act that our office is often, frequently, in almost every habeas corpus case, directed to coordinate between the clerk's offices. Right. We are never the custodian of the records, consistent with the court's order. The records are forwarded between the state court clerk's offices and the federal district court clerk's offices.
Right. My question was not really to get to the ex parte issue. I appreciate that issue, but there's docket entries that are private. So whether it's ex parte or not, that's not really my concern. I mean, the petitioner doesn't know, based on what happened here, what went to the court.
I think that the petitioner was, I recognize that the CMECF notifications are often issued about the transmission of the state court records, and we receive those frequently. But the petitioner received notice in several ways. I would point out that in our filing, we noted that pursuant to the court's order to respond, that we had requested the transmission of the state court records. The court also noted that it was ordering us to to coordinate the transmission of those records. And then, of course, the court made its findings. And I do think that the court's findings were in direct response to the petitioner's complaints in his Rule 60B motion.
So taking that further, it sounds like it's your position that a petitioner is not entitled to some actual notice when the court receives documents as to what documents it receives and might be relying on to review the petition?
Well, Your Honor, I think the point of notice, for example, here, the petitioner was issued a Roseboro notice. I don't think it's in the joint appendix, but it's Doc 10 on the district court sheet. It provides notice to the petitioner about what he can do next, what the court may do next. But in terms of the receipt of the records, I don't see what the notice would do for the petitioner. And I would also...
He could then request what was transmitted. He could request a look at what the court file has. He could go to the courthouse, not him personally, whoever represents him, could go to the courthouse and look. The whole point is, I don't understand why there's a secret docket entry. The public docket goes from docket number 9, say, to docket 11 and skips 10. And it goes from 12 to 15 and skips 14. I mean, it's a peculiar practice, and the public doesn't know that the court received the documents, and neither did he. And now the question is, there's a lot of usefulness in knowing that. He could go see whether it's complete. He could get a look at materials, request copies.
I don't think there's anything here to indicate that the petitioner was denied access or even requested access.
Wasn't provided with knowledge of it.
Right. I think that's maybe correct, but had he known, he might, as Judge Niemeyer says, wanted to say, hey, it says you got the whole record. I want to make sure, you know, nothing's missing. And in this case, almost, I recognize there are multiple things that could have happened here, and I don't know. But one explanation could be that the court didn't have the whole record. I know you think that's not right, and you may be right. I certainly don't know. But doesn't a petitioner, I mean, you know, the habeas burden is very high. You know, we talk about that all the time in our cases. It just seems like we're doing a whole bunch of stuff here when, you know, it seems fairly basic that a party should be entitled to know what goes to the court and at least have the ability to go take a look at it.
Well, and Your Honor, I don't think there's any indication that the petitioner thought that he was even being denied his own access. I understand he was concerned about the court having those documents, and I think that's a separate issue because the petitioner never complained that he did not have these documents. He cited his own transcripts in reviewing the state habeas record. I think that my investigation revealed additional support for, and I can provide it to the court if you are interested in it, but in knowing that the petitioner had access to those documents, the exhibits that he complains about are records that he had previously filed. And so, yes, Your Honor, I'm sorry.
No. Are you saying from the state proceedings he had his own copies? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, Your Honor. In the state habeas proceedings, the petitioner filed his own transcripts as exhibits.
Okay, thank you.
And I recognize that that record's not before this court, but I can provide that information to the court because I looked at it.
I don't dispute that he would have had some or all or a lot. I mean, I don't know what that is, but I think that's a fair point that, you know, at the end of the day, he might have had a lot, but he might have had a lot and still wanted to see what the court had to see if it matched up.
Well, and I think that falls outside of Rule 5. I would.
That may be true.
And I would point to this court's body of law saying that the constitutional standard, which is not encompassed in Rule 5. Rule 5 is a procedural rule of court. It is different. A constitutional standard, this court has issued multiple cases and opinions saying that the petitioner must make a particularized showing. With my remaining time, I would like to touch on the fact that the records are regularly transferred between the courts. They are not redacted. It is not appropriate for them to be uploaded to the public-facing docket because my office is never the custodian of those records. The clerk's offices would be required to redact those records in accordance with the local and civil rules of procedure. And we never purported to file any of those records as exhibits in this case. And so the petitioner was not entitled to a copy of his record under Thompson, under Rule 5, and he's failed to meet the constitutional showing. Are there any other questions or concerns that I can address from the court?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I would ask this court to affirm.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Mr. Harawa.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. A few quick points. So this court was abundantly clear in Thompson v. Green, and I can read, this is from page 271. The Attorney General raises on appeal other contentions that he is not required to serve exhibits because they should already possess the documents or have general knowledge of those contents. This court rejected that argument as borderline frivolous and said, and I quote, it is irrelevant whether a petitioner can demonstrate need to the court or whether he already has the documents. So that argument has been considered and squarely rejected by the court. I also would like to point out that Mr. Sanford could not have been clearer in his documents that he was missing some of the records or that he was unsure that the court had all of the records. So if you look at page JA212, which is his response to the motion to dismiss, I quote, the respondent fails to comply with Rule 5B, 5C, and 5D governing Section 2254 cases. So he points out very explicitly that the state failed to comply with the habeas rules both by B, which is addressing his contentions, C, which is a transcripts rule, and D, which is including his briefing. In his motion to order records, he says, because of respondent's failure to comply with Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 5, he asked for additional records. And that's on page 224, again, of the Joint Appendix. And so I just don't think it's fair to categorize Mr. Sanford's arguments here as anything but I don't have what I need to litigate.
That motion, he filed a specific motion to order records.
Yes.
And that motion was denied without explanation, except for one request. And I didn't see that request for, it was a request for some movie transcript.
Yes. And Your Honor, if you look at,
that's the only thing that was denied and the rest it wasn't addressed.
Yeah. And the court just didn't address anything else. And then if you look at his Rule 60 motion, he's very clear that he is unsure that the court has all of the records before it, that it needs to issue its ruling in part because of the state's Rule 5 violations. And I mean, to the extent the state is trying to make a harm argument, even though Thompson said there's no harm showing required, it is hard to say this is harmless, given the fact that A, there's no finding on this record that Mr. Sanford had everything. But B, this idea that maybe some of the records were sent inadvertently back, like that's just not the type of guesswork, respectfully, that this court should have to engage in.
So could I ask you about an issue that was raised right at the end of your colleague's argument, and it's addressed in the briefs about, you know, if like here, there's a request, you know, by the court for documents in addition to the, the other parts of 5C. And the state, as they do here, sends or undertakes to request that the state court send the complete files. Then there are contents of those files that there may be confidentiality issues to. And the state saying, look, I mean, they're not our documents. We're not custodians. We don't want to be responsible for any violation like that. What's your response to that? Are you seeking to have them do that type of review, or are you saying, look, we're not asking for them to be filed. We just, we need to know what they are and have an opportunity to review them, and whoever files them can do whatever needs to be done from a confidentiality standpoint.
Sure, Your Honor. I think there are a few points in response to that question. The first is, I think notice is important. And Mr. Sanford did not even know that the courts forwarded the document. There's nothing in the record other than the order saying to forward the documents until the district court, issued its ruling now saying, I have this internal docket sheet. I received these documents. So I think there's a very real notice problem. Then if you look at the district court's order for the records, which is on page 60 of the joint appendix, the court makes clear that it says, send the records if pertinent and available. And I don't read that language to say, just send everything to me. I think that necessarily requires some calling on the state's part. Now, I don't know the relationship that the state has between state courts and district courts, but what I do know is that this is one of the key reasons why habeas rule 5 exists, is so that the necessary pertinent documents can be picked from those records and served upon the court, can be docketed and sent to the petitioner. I don't want to make any kind of broader representations about the entire state court record being needed to be updated to uploaded to PACER or anything like that. But I will say that in a situation where it's clear the state has an obligation to do this, the state didn't meet its obligation, the fact that it just had all the records sent can somehow excuse its failure to comply with habeas rule 5.
Mr. Arora, to follow up with that, so if we were to agree with you that this case needs to go back, what is the precise remedy that you're asking the court to direct?
I mean, Your Honor, I think first we need to reconstruct the we need to figure out where the records are. And then I think the state needs to file an answer that is compliant with Rule 5 once the records are found. And because of the missing records and because of kind of the complications or the mess of this case, I would respectfully ask that this court include that the district court appoint Mr. Sanford counsel to help him navigate what goes on if this court were to remand the case.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is, with respect to Judge Quattlebaum's question, are you asking for the court to direct service of the entire record on your client or his counsel, or would you be satisfied with the, I think at the very beginning of this argument, you indicated that it would be up to the state to call and decide what it deemed to be relevant and pertinent, attach that to a new answer, and have that served on the petitioner to start the process anew.
Sorry, Your Honor. I think there are two responses. I think there needs to be a compliant answer file that complies with Habeas Rule 5. Now that we know that the district court has the documents, I think Mr. Sanford's counsel should have access to those documents and should be able to take from them.
Doesn't have the documents.
Or now that
the record that the district court had, the files the district court have, we now have. We do not have the habeas records.
Yes.
So for the district court to have the full vote, we have to make sure that Norfolk sends, if they didn't send it, sends it up, or resend it if they did send it, but send up the habeas file to the district court. We have to send back our file to the district court.
I'm sorry. Let me be clear. So I think first this court needs to transfer what it has back to the district court, which I appreciate this court actually let me comb through the files. And then I think we need to figure out where the state trial habeas records are in Norfolk and have them sent to the district court. There are also state appellate habeas records, which are missing, that need to be located and sent to the district court. And then I'm not saying that the district court necessarily has to upload everything to PACER, but I do think that Mr. Sanford and his counsel needs to have access to those documents if the district court has them and may potentially rely on them. If there are no further questions, we respectfully ask for this court to remand for further proceedings. Thank you, Your Honors.
Do I understand your court report appointed?
Yes, sir.
Are you going to stay with him when it goes, if it goes back down?
I can stay with him under the limited nature of my clinic that I represent.
Your appointment is for the appeal?
Yes, sir.
I want to recognize your service to the court, and thank you very much. And I want to thank both counsel for their arguments. As you know, we normally come down and shake hands, and we would come down and shake hands and make all amends that any injustice we may have already perpetuated. And thank you for your arguments. Next time you come, we'll be shaking hands. But thank you very much for your arguments.
Look forward to that.
We'll adjourn court for the day.
This honorable court stands adjourned until tomorrow morning. God save the United States and its honorable court.